Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the July 2nd, 2017 session, focusing on Genesis 22, verses 1 through 14. Who is tested? I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm Seth Oppenheimer.
And I'm Daniel Glaze.
Well, we are excited that we again have, we call him our rabbi, but Rabbi Seth Oppenheimer back with us. Seth, as you've heard on the last several podcasts, he's been with us, and he is a professor at Mississippi State teaching mathematics and statistics, something that is completely foreign to me. And he serves as the spiritual leader of Congregation B'nai and B'nai Israel in Columbus, Mississippi. And Seth, we're glad you're here again.
I'm always happy to join in. I learn from y'all.
We learn from you as well. Bert, again, is away, and we know he's going to be joining us again soon, and look forward to his being part of our conversation again. So I kind of do wish Bert was here with us tonight, because we could use his wit perhaps with this one. Mm-hmm. We have a text that, you know, in some ways I'd rather not discuss tonight. I'm kind of thinking maybe we could talk about movies or sports, cars. I don't know. Is there what do y'all want to talk about?
Yeah.
Like anything else.
Anything else. So the text today is another Genesis text that, you know, if you read it straight up, it raises lots of questions. So I'm thinking we may end up struggling with a lot of questions for this episode. And Daniel, maybe you can help us start with some of those.
Oh, I thought you were serious. I thought you were just going to skip right to the end and give us that beautiful conclusion and then wish us a good night.
Then we just, yeah, we'd be done.
No. Well, I guess I was being hopeful because, I mean, if I'm honest, like you, I just don't like the story. I don't like how God is portrayed. I don't like the Father's obedience. I just don't like it. But here it is, staring us in the face, so let's do our best. If you recall the story, God promises Abraham many descendants. It wasn't until Abraham is 100 and Sarah, his wife, is 90 that they receive word that a son will be born. When they receive this news, Sarah begins laughing. The son is born and his name is Isaac, a reference to this laughing. Fast forward a few years. Isaac is a little boy. God tells Abraham to take Isaac, his son, up on the mountain and offer him as a sacrifice. So from the get-go, this is a difficult story. This is a story of God demanding the sacrifice of a child. And remember, this is the child Abraham and Sarah had late in life, their one hope for the future. Go, God says to Abraham, make of him a burnt offering. And somehow, Abraham obeys and trusts God and does as he's told. Whenever I read this story, I get a horrible mental image of Isaac, that little boy being placed on an altar, looking up at his father who is about to sacrifice him. It's awful, I know, but I can't shake that image from my mind. And in the end, thank goodness, God provides a ram to be sacrificed instead of Isaac. But Abraham doesn't know that when God asks him to sacrifice his son, and God doesn't tell him. I'm not sure what else I can say at this point other than this is a tough one, dear listeners. And I've preached on this story a handful of times, and I never quite know what to say. But I think this story teaches us that we shall have no other God but God. Nothing else. Not the God of family or anything else. Only God is God. Perhaps this is why some people put themselves in harm's way every day for the sake of the gospel. Perhaps this is why some people give up everything they have and everything they are in order to be faithful to God's call upon their lives. As tough as it is, God calls for ultimate devotion, and God offers that in return, I think. Perhaps that's what another Isaac, the hymn writer Isaac Watts, meant when he said that the love of God, quote, demands my soul, my life, my all. That's a little background on our text for today.
I'd like to point out that a lot that there's nothing in the text that says that Isaac is a little boy. And in fact, in a lot of the traditional rabbinic commentaries, it's assumed that he's an adult man, 40 years old, perhaps. And he's carrying stuff, right? He's carrying the wood. He knows to ask about where's the ram for the sacrifice and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So he may have more agency in this than the way you're reading the story. May I start with four interpretations of this story? This is the second day Rosh Hashanah reading. So I've had to write an unfortunate number of sermons on this.
Sorry.
When people are actually showing up. So it starts with God speaking here in the second verse. Vayomer kachna, and he said, take please, na, please, et bincha, your son, et yachidcha, asher ahavta, your only son, who you love. He has another son he's already sacrificed, who he sent into the wilderness. And we have no reason to think at this point he already knows that they're okay. All we know that Abraham knows at this point is he sent his eldest son into the wilderness, and he had God's assurance that it would be okay. Et Yitzchak, Isaac, v'lech lecha, and go forth. It's the same opening where God sends Abraham into the land of Canaan. Lech lecha, go forth. And it can be read, go into yourself as well. The Hebrew is ambiguous, at least the way I read it, with my poor Hebrew grammar. So is this another going into himself as well as going out? El Eretz HaMoriah, to the land of Moriah, and so on. I'll show you a mountain, you'll sacrifice your son. So two traditional responses. Well, three. We can do the Spanish Inquisition routine. One is, it's perfectly normal to sacrifice your child at this point in time, right? We have stories, even once the kingdoms arise, of their enemies sacrificing their children. Kings will sacrifice their sons on the eve of battle to be successful. And so apologists might say, this is a story about saying, go sacrifice your child, and then, no, don't. And it's a story that you shouldn't sacrifice your children. So some commentators read this as a story told at a time when child sacrifice was common, as a sign that you should not perform child sacrifice. There is a traditional story that Abraham did sacrifice Isaac, but then Isaac was resurrected and the ram was sacrificed. And there is the straight reading. Abraham believed that he was going to be loyal to God, and he went forth and he was going to do it, and God stopped him. And it's a sign of Abraham's great faith. I don't like any of these. I have two visceral interpretations of my own that I would like to offer.
Yes.
One is, Abraham is not being tested. God is being tested. Abraham has been promised that his line will continue through Isaac and Isaac's descendants. If he kills Isaac, that promise is a lie, just as Isaac being his only son is a lie. And Abraham's faith is that God will stop him before the sacrifice is carried out. And he's testing God, not God testing Abraham. Because remember, just a few short passages back, shall not the judge of all the world do justice when talking about Sodom and Gomorrah? Will you kill the innocent along with the guilty? Where did he go? In the first sermon I ever wrote and delivered publicly, I said the difference between Abraham and Noah is that Abraham questioned God when he thought God was going to do something unjust, and Noah priced gopher wood and marine paint. So Noah was good in his generation. Abraham was just. The other one, the other interpretation, which I perhaps feel more viscerally, and trying to put myself in Abraham's sandals. If that knife falls, my life has been a lie. I followed this God from my home, from my family, into the wilderness. I've gone through trials and tribulations. My child has been promised to me. I've already lost one son, sent into the wilderness with the assurance that he's going to be just fine. And here I am on the mountaintop, and my child is bound on an altar of stones and wood before me, and the knife is in my hand, reaching up. And if that knife falls, it's not going into my son, it's going into me. If that knife falls, I'm killing myself. Because everything I've lived my life for is a lie. I don't know that that's any better than any of the traditional interpretations. But I really feel in either of those, God is the one being tested. So, my two shekels.
Yeah. I was curious about something you mentioned, because it does change things. The age of, at least my own mental image of this story, the age of Isaac. So when, but both, and maybe it's just my translation, both Abraham and God refer to him as the boy. Would that just be male?
The lad? It doesn't necessarily mean that he's young, the lad. Because remember, that's how Joseph is referred to when we know he's already in his late teens or early 20s.
Okay.
He's referred to.
I did not look that up. I was just going from my...
I mean, I could be wrong about this. Okay. Let me see. Take your son, your only love. Yeah.
It could be.
I'm not
be.
Sure. I just know that there are traditional midrashim that give his age as late, as being mm-hmm. an adult. And this screws him up.
Totally.
He's completely screwed up, and it kills Sarah. Immediately after this story, Sarah dies. The story ends. And word reaches Sarah somehow, is how the rabbis interpret it. And Sarah dies because of this event. And Isaac was a mama's boy. He loved his mama. When he marries, he goes into his mother's tent with his wife, Rivka. And she comforts him for the loss of his mother. That's what love is for him. Mm. And he spends, after his children are born and they're young men, he's one of those hypochondriacs who spends forever dying in his tent, because he's dying and giving his sons their blessings when Jacob takes off for his uncle's. And 20 years later plus, it's not until he's back in town and he and his brother Esau bury him. So he's been messed up by this.
You mentioned Sarah's relationship with Isaac, which is an interesting one here. And I've always been struck by the fact that, as far as we know, Abraham doesn't tell Sarah about this little plan. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out why.
I think that this would be the straw that breaks the camel's back.
Yes, it would.
Okay, I'll pretend to be your sister, and you can, send me out to these powerful men so that your way is eased. But don't you kill my boy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's a hard passage.
Yeah.
And we have to throw some sort of the straight reading. Makes me completely lose respect for Abraham.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, Seth, I appreciate the context you provided this, and that when you consider some of the other stories of Sarah, that it may have, child sacrifice may have been common, but if we are to try to learn from these texts and to realize that these stories are our own, I mean, it does get very troubling. If someone in my congregation comes up to me, comes into my office and says, Pastor, God has told me to sacrifice my child. I do not say, wow, you are very faithful. I call the police.
Right. Yeah.
It's what I say, why don't you sit down here and stay right here, and I'm going to make a phone call and don't go anywhere.
This is not the Abraham who stands up to God and for whom God is the embodiment of justice, mm-hmm. And when he sees God, he perceives God to be turning away from justice.
Mm-hmm.
Calls God to task.
Right.
Where is that, Abraham?
And for our listeners, let's give a reference for that. That's right before Sodom and Gomorrah, when God destroys Sodom and Gomorrah. Abraham knows that God is planning to do this, and they have this back and forth. It's right after the angels come and tell Abraham and Sarah they're going to have a child, right before the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, right? That's the story you're referring to. Just to help our listeners know what we're talking about there. And you're right, Abraham does. Abraham questions and challenges God. And it is few in scripture who get away with that.
Yeah. Gets God to change God's mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, tries.
Yeah. But Seth, you talked a couple weeks ago about the arc of this tale encompassing some of the things that we have split up. Would this be included in that arc?
Oh, yeah.
I'm forgetting what you... I forgot exactly how you pieced all that together.
So we have the angels coming and saying that Isaac is born. And then we have the whole arc of this story that goes from the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, the story of Lot. You have what we studied last time in terms of Ishmael being banished, the story of battles. Anyways, but we end up with this Akedah, the binding of Isaac. And then the next traditional portion after we have Abraham returning home, right? They don't go together. They go their separate ways.
They never talk again, correct? Abraham and Isaac never speak again.
I don't think so. I think the next time we see them together or when Ishmael and Isaac get together
to bury
Abraham. Mm-hmm. Although we have the story of Abraham sending his servant Eliezer to find a wife for Isaac. So he may be back in the camp at this point, but we don't have any scenes where they talk.
I guess what I was getting at, Seth, I'm sorry if I interrupted
you. No, it's
you.
Fine.
What I was getting at is when that whole arc is read together, I would assume that the behavior of Abraham is that much more jarring when you're seeing this whole arc together. I guess that's what was striking me, that if this is read together, that would make this behavior here seems so out of character or jarring. You know what I mean?
We have him kind of knuckling under to God and Sarah sending Ishmael out. Mm-hmm. But other than that, this is the mighty sheikh who can field his own army, who challenges God when he thinks God is wrong, who hobnobs with kings and holds his own. And then suddenly he meekly says, "Oh, you want me to kill my son? Okay."
Mm-hmm.
There is a Maimonides says that he misheard God. That what God really said, "Ola," a sacrifice is the same sort of route as, because you send up the smoke, is to go up also. So I just want you to take Isaac up a mountain. Not I don't want you to sacrifice him. But that's kind of a Weasley way out of the story. Yeah, sure. I think it's pretty clear what's going on here.
Yeah, I can tell you don't buy that.
So, so why test God?
That's a real good question. What's the import of this story? Why is this story in the text?
I ask the question because I connect with your second interpretation deeply. That idea that, now, granted, I have not been walking this path nearly as long as Abraham, but there are moments when I have come to, when I have seen what has been done in the name of religion, when I have been so frustrated with people from my own tradition and the damage that is caused, I have found myself asking the things that I believe and claim and teach and fight for, are they real? Is this thing that I have based my life on, is it real? Does it hold water? And there have been moments of doubt. We talk about that on this podcast often, that the doubt comes and it's a part of it. And so I connected very deeply with that interpretation that you talk about. But even still, why test God? What, why is it in the text?
I don't know. It's such a difficult story. And aside from the fact that it kind of explains Isaac's difficulties later in life in some ways. But Isaac is so admirable because he redigs the wells. He maintains and repairs. He's not listed as someone who digs new wells, but he redigs the old ones and maintains, and he doesn't want to fight. He just wants a peaceful life. And can you blame him at this point? But I don't know why. Why do we tell this story? The interpreters say this is a way to condemn child sacrifice. That's a very attractive thing. It lets God off the hook. But I don't know why we include this story, and it's such an important formative story. But why is this in the text? I mean, if I were a literalist, I'd say, because that's what happened. But I'm not a literalist. So why do we have it in the text? I don't know.
Not unlike our lives, where there are plenty of places we ask why. And there are no easy answers. And yet, here we are.
I don't think anybody's going to preach the text after they listen to our podcast, but
golly, I talked a lot compared to everyone else this night.
I was going to say, I normally use this podcast for sermon prep.
Not on this one.
Yeah, I keep reminding myself, Bert and I need to exchange our Bible backgrounds and just preach those. But
that's right. Help each other out. Well, you know, the scriptures are full of stories that sometimes we can't make sense of. They're not neat and tidy, and neither are our lives. And maybe that's part of the faith journey we're on. I appreciate, though, the sharing of these questions. I think that's part of what the congregation does for itself, is to journey together and ask not only questions about these hard passages, but the hard places in our lives where the why is very prominent. So thanks for sharing that word and question tonight.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks.
Good night. Good chat.
Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.